Welcome to Mecha Do About Nothing, the only mecha podcast funded by Stolen Gold Bars. I'm your host, Ian Gregory.
And I'm your host, Daniel Forziat.
And this week we're taking on the classic show, Armored Trooper Votoms, our first show that's longer than 50 episodes, which is going to be short to not bother us at all when it comes time.
Yeah. Is this really our longest show we've ever done? 52
it
episodes?
Is 52, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's the longest.
You know what that means. We gotta do Gundam Seed and Seed Destiny
I was
next.
About to say we'll have to do Seed to make up for it. The only show I was trying to think of a Gundam show or something that was longer, and I could only get to Seed.
I want to say one of the SD Gundams. Now, really count.
High priority, the SD Gundams.
But
for
I
us.
Do believe one of those is like extremely long. Like 70 episodes or something.
Once we
crazy.
Get into all 75 episodes of Doozy Bots, you better be ready.
Oh, man.
I wish.
Let's do it, man. I'm ready to do Doozy Bots whenever.
Oh, boy. So, Armored Trooper Votoms. Soko Kihei Votomzu.
Oh, that was good.
How's that? Yeah.
Listen, I'm not the one to ask, but I'll get you're, my neighbor.
You know
here.
More than me. All right.
Yeah, it's true. But I don't know what words you're supposed
is that,
to say.
Do you know, Soko, I have it written there in the romanization in the script. Is that, does that actually mean armored troopers? Or is this like a...
Because, what do you think someone studying for the JLPT M3 is learning? Do you think I'm learning what the words armored and troopers?
I would hope so, Dan. Clearly they're very important. I want to know because I often think of Ideon. The Japanese name is, you know, Densetsu Kyojin Ideon. Legendary giant Ideon. But the English name is Space Runaway Ideon. So I'm always interested to know if we actually get the real name, but it seems likely to me that this is probably right.
There's also this weird thing that when it comes to movie titles and show titles, those are extremely and heavily localized. I don't know if you've noticed that, but as someone who lives in a foreign country, the best example I can give for you is everyone knows the Pixar, is it Disney, whatever, movie Frozen, right?
Yeah.
But in Japanese, it's like, and I'm forgetting what it is, but it's something like the Land of Ice's Princess is like how it like roughly translates. And it's like, that's not at all the same, but like it has it. So they sort of like, I don't know what they do, but they try to make it like way, way.
Yeah. It says here it's Anna to Uki no Jo-o,
which
is something like Anna and the Snow Queen.
Yeah, Anna and the Snow Queen, my
bad. Which is a technically accurate way to describe Frozen.
It is, but it's so interesting on why they do that, because they could have just, like, used katakana, which is their... Yeah, which is their loan word language, and just did that.
Yeah.
But they didn't. So there's got to be, like, something in there. We're not connecting the dots, dude. But anyhow, long story short, going back to what you're saying, I have no idea what Soko, whatever you just said, is.
Soko Kihei Votoms.
Soko Kihei Votoms.
I know that Votoms is meant to sound like the word bottoms as a pun. I've read this on Wikipedia. I don't actually know if it's come up in the show yet. Where because Votoms pilots are so easily killed that they're called bottoms because they're expendable.
Oh, God. Okay.
I've got another reason they might be called bottoms, but I don't know if I want to repeat it.
There's no V sound in the Japanese language, so a lot of times for the V sound, they use the B sound.
Right.
So for Vietnam, it's literally Vietnamu.
Right.
B, B, B. Which is weird. I don't know why they do that. But that's also interesting.
Soko Kihei Botamzu.
Botamzu.
The Blu-ray for this series just came out in America after decades.
What? Wait. It just came out?
Yeah, after decades of this show not really being available unless you had some old DVDs, you can get your hands on a nicer Blu-ray that fixes some but not all of the old issues with it, with like the version they've been using. So,
oh, wow, okay.
I know, so good timing on our part. I guess this is our inadvertent ad for the Blu-ray series for Botomzu. So check that out. But of course, this is a 1983 Sunrise original, which puts this just a year after SDF Macross, and just 4 years after the launch of First Gundam. So that's a pretty tight timeline for early mecha series, I think, right?
Yeah, I think this is certainly riding the tail then of Gundam. Not really Macross, because you can't really do that quick of a turnaround.
No, but it's real robot, like the rise of that genre.
And you can very much tell that this is Gundam inspired.
Yeah, well, let's look at some of this cast, and I think we'll see. So our director here is Ryosuke Takahashi, who has not too many directorial credits that are familiar to us in the States, but he's worked at Sunrise for decades and decades and still does. Directed, let's see, Cyborg 09, Flag, Ozuma. He wrote the script for Astro Boy. Huh. He's something like he's a veteran Sunrise director, but not one that's gotten a lot of fame or famous series.
Yeah, I was looking through and I was like, I have no idea what any of this is, but I'm sure it's like old, really niche stuff that like 60-year-old Japanese men really like today.
Yeah, he had a series come out as recently as like 2 or 3 years ago, so still active. Our mech design is a familiar name. You may have suspected his involvement from the moment you looked at the art of the Votoms in this show. It's Kunio Okawara, of course, the master Gundam designer. He's also done stuff for the Ultraman, the animated series, and Brave Exkaiser, as well as a whole bunch of other random Sunrise shows. But
I feel like we've mentioned him. Like, yeah, 28 different times.
We all know what he's most known for, and we'll get into that in the mech quarters.
It's like, we'll go to Gundam Age next, and we'll be like, oh yeah, there's Kunio Okawara again. Ha ha ha, of course, right.
Like, perfunctorily, like, he's around.
He's just in everything.
Our character designer is Norio Shioyama, who's done designs on Ronin Warriors, Victory Gundam, and Inuyasha.
Yeah, a lot of that's not true as well. This guy is mostly a director and a key animator.
Huh.
So I don't know why he did character design on this, but he did character design on Victory Gundam, and I think like principal design on Inuyasha or something like that. But yeah, his character design stuff, I had no idea. Like, I don't know what Ronin Warriors is. I'm going to be completely honest with you.
And our music is... this is so interesting. It's by Hiroki Inui, who has done music for like 5 total shows ever. He did it for Votoms, he did it for SPT Lesnar, he did it for Gambare Tabuchi-kun, and Miss Machiko. And that's it. Those are the only series he's done music on. I think his music for this show is pretty good, pretty distinctive, so it's interesting that he's not actually prolific.
Yeah, he just like hangs out, helps his friends out at Sunrise whenever. Yeah. He needs to, I guess.
I mean, if you think about it now, though, Sunrise has on deck probably some of the biggest anime composers like Hiroyuki Sawano and stuff that they call on.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They sort of developed that relationship. So
I wonder what Hathaway's Flash is going to have. Probably
I would
him.
Assume Sawano music, right? If he's the unicorn era guy.
Yeah, right. Like this mid-UC.
Mm-hmm. So... ooh, boy, what are your overall feelings about our first 10 episodes of Votoms?
I feel like I'm repeating myself constantly, because I said the exact same thing with
Overman
King Gainer. I'm jaded, man. I'm, like, old already. This has aged me. It's like, you know this...
No, we haven't watched Age yet.
Man, we keep talking about Gundam Age, baby. you know how when you see those pictures of the president, and it's like, this is them their first year, and this is them after their first term, right, yeah, in office, and they're just like, they're all really old. That's just us.
I always think of Obama for that one, right? Because he had brown hair, and then he just had gray hair. Like,
yeah,
instantly.
It's like, less Bush, but there's a really good one of Abraham Lincoln, too.
Mm.
Where it just seems to be a thing, right? Like, you get into office, it's like the most horrifying thing in the world, because you have, well, you know. Some people have to work really hard. Yeah. And then, you know, at the end of it, you're just like completely destroyed. And that's how I feel very similarly.
That's what this podcast has done to you. It's prematurely aged you.
But in the, like, put on the mech glasses, right? And that's what it's done to me. Okay. Sorry. Going back to my overall feelings. And I think you might agree with me on this, is that I don't know if I feel like I can have an opinion on this show yet, because the first episode is really plot heavy. And then the second episode is also pretty plot heavy. And then from then on out, I don't know if we are in the main show or if we are in a side story. If this is like not an important thing that's happening. I would assume that everyone we've met so far in like the little crew, like the underground, mm-hmm, like poor people crew, is going to be a main character throughout the rest of the show, because it wouldn't make sense if they weren't.
No, but wouldn't it be hilarious if they weren't?
But, like, at the same time, it feels like this... I don't know where the show is going at all, because we've both never seen it, and I don't know anything about it. So, like, what if he, like, gets back together with, like, his old military unit or something? I don't know. So, that being said, I have no idea what's happening. I don't know how to feel. What about you?
There are parts of the show that I think are extremely cool that we'll get into in our discussion. Stuff that's, like, really unique and makes me really interested in where this show is going. But you're also right that these first 10 episodes, like, episode one, you're like, holy cow, what's going on? This is really cool. And episode two, you're like, all right, I didn't expect this, but I like the turn this has taken. And then episode, like, 4 through 8 are the same episode, just repeated. Like, it sort of, like, spins its wheels really early, which feels strange. Like, they're like, all right, what's going to happen? They're like, all right, we're just going to keep doing the same thing over and over again because we don't know what's going on either. I wish the show was doing something. And part of it is, like, you sort of pick up on these hints of this larger conspiracy. It's clearly trying to, like, scatter throughout so that you gradually build up to them. But the problem is that the main action the character is taking is fairly boring. So I was losing interest and then gaining it again at, like, as we hinted at something bigger and then losing interest. And unfortunately, I think that these episodes end up being the world's fastest desert.
Yeah, right? Like, holy crap. Like, this, like, normally our first 10 episodes of a show are usually pretty, I would say they're good, right? Because it's before the show can get bad, and it's before we are
burnt out, like, on exposed the premise.
And the fact that we're already, like, kind of wanting to get this going is, like, is not good.
I usually think of the first 10 episodes of a show, of, like, the long shows we watch, try to, like, establish the paradigm for what every episode is going to be like, and for what, like, sort of things are going to be happening in the show and what the setting is. Macross 7 uses its first 10 episodes just to do single episode shots of them playing music,
really good,
right?
Example.
By the end of the first 10 episodes of Macross 7, you're like, I know what this show's about now. You like it or not, but you know what it's about. First 10 episodes of Gundam, that's Garma dying. That's, like, that's probably the 10 first episodes of any of these.
Oh my
shows,
gosh, but it happens that quickly? Garma dies at, like, the 10th episode?
Yeah.
Oh,
and so that is, like, okay, I know what this show's about.
In comparison.
By the 10th episode of what, SDF Macross, you're back out in space. You have an idea of where you are. Like, they've folded out to Pluto, and they're like, we got to get back to Earth.
Oh, yeah. Which is, like, where the movie starts, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a good idea, movie. But yeah, first 10 episodes of Pat Labor, you know where you're at. I don't know. For these shows, the first 10 episodes really tell you, by the end of it, you have an idea of what the show's about, what the mood of the show is, and what the goal of the show is. Like, why are we doing this? After these 10 episodes, I could tell you what the mood of the show is, but I couldn't tell you exactly what is happening and what the goal is.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find particularly weird because I think this is maybe the most driven main character of any show we've seen so far. Like, sure. We have yet to have a character who so clearly has goals he wants to accomplish, and yet nothing is happening.
Yeah. All right.
We'll get into it. This is an interesting sort of mess, though, at least. It's not boring.
Mm-hmm.
It's no detonator organ situation.
Whoa, come on. Let it die. Let it just...
Two space civilizations, Gilgamesh and Balerant, have been at war for centuries. A soldier from the planet of Melkia, who serves in the Melkian army for Gilgamesh, Chirakokuvi, is an AT pilot, someone who pilots the humanoid mecha known as Votoms. He is dispatched on a top-secret mission where he raids a spaceship that he soon realizes belongs to his own side. He's ordered to ignore it, and in the raid, he soon discovers a mysterious woman in a pod. While other soldiers uncover massive amounts of gold. Right as he's about to be discovered, Chirico leaves the woman and enters space, where an explosion knocks out his suit. He floats in space, thinking he's going to die, but then gets picked up by another Melkian Gilgamesh ship, where they torture and interrogate him about what his mission was, though he has no idea how to answer. Chirico manages to escape and flee, though he doesn't realize a tracking beacon has been planted in him. Chirico resolves to figure out what the purpose of the mission was, who the mysterious woman was, and why he was ordered to fight his own side. After Chirico's escape, Gilgamesh and Balerant sign a peace treaty, ending the Hundred Years' War. 6 months pass, and Chirico has slipped away into the city of Udo. almost immediately after entering the city, like literally he's like bought a piece of food from a street vendor. He is abducted by a gang of bikers where he is forced to, as a slave, to dig for jagirium, a rare mineral. The biker gang runs their slave operation with the tacit approval of the police, who arrive that night to call off the deal because of the end of the war. At the same time, a slave revolt occurs, and Chirico manages to escape, and in the chaos, the chief of police is killed. He's almost recaptured by the bikers, but is saved by the Melkian spy network. Chirico falls into a scrapyard, where he meets Buluz Gotho, who owns the scrapyard. Gotho helps Chirico, and he also meets Kokona, a street girl. Following the old chief of police deaths, Gimual Iskui, who's mostly just known as Iskui, takes over the role, and he is a member of the secret society who took Chirico on that mission. Chirico repairs a Votoms in the scrapyard and meets Vanilla, a black market dealer. Chirico fights off the bikers in the Votoms right as the police arrive, firebombing the area. The Melkian spies show up again to save Chirico, this time by hosing down his burning unit. Chirico is convinced into competing in a Votoms battling arena, where he spies a mysterious woman. Chirico mocks the fighters, and he has to fight Lieutenant Conan, who is one of his superior officers from the operation who works for the secret society. Chirico wins, but is arrested by the police. He's interrogated by Serg Burrow, a member of the secret society posing as a priest. Chirico is eventually freed by the trio of Vanilla, Gotho, and Kokona. He's then offered another battling match, this time against Captain Araya, another commander from the operation. Chirico wins again, but his opponent is killed right before he can reveal the secret of what's going on. The police attempt to catch Chirico, and he escapes with his three friends. Chirico sneaks away from them to infiltrate the police tower and finds Iskui, from whom he demands answers. Iskui agrees to explain everything to Chirico and takes him in a helicopter to a secondary location where he springs a trap. Chirico is saved by Gotho and escapes, but meets up with the mysterious woman who happens to be the woman from the pod from the very beginning, known as the Prototype. Vanilla hijacks a helicopter and he escapes with his friends. Chirico evades the police and plans an ambush to steal a bunch of jagirium from the cops, though Kokona is forced to tell the bikers, which leads to a massive street war, allowing them to escape with the minerals. They decide to make a deal with the police to sell the minerals back to them, but then they're ambushed and Chirico is defeated in combat by the Prototype and captured. He is freed again by Gotho, Vanilla, and Kokona, and decides he can trust them because they've only saved his life like four times now. Chirico builds a new Votoms in the arena and modifies it into the Red Shoulder type. His friends realize this means he was a Red Shoulder, a particular dangerous type of AT pilot. Just as he finishes, the police move in to apprehend them.
Well, Ian, you've done it.
Yeah.
You've written the longest summary so far.
I think so. I probably could have cut that down. But to be honest, there's a lot of little bits in there where it's like, oh, and then this random side character in this one episode is actually like a member of the secret society that's really important. So yeah, you remember them? They were in the first episode. You probably actually don't remember what they look like, but I wonder, honestly, if the theme of the show is going to be like Chirico meets someone and then learns that they too were on that operation.
That's just the entire show. It's just him putting together what happened.
But, like, I think it's just going to be a long list of random people keep showing up, and he's like, oh, they were there, too, even though they weren't showing up in the first episode.
Yeah, right, like, you've never seen them, but they were there.
Also, I can't, I don't, you know, I don't speak Japanese, but I have a feeling that a lot of the time Chirico is using the classic vague, nonspecific object for, like, the things that happened on that day. Do you know that style of speech I'm talking about?
I know exactly. Where they just don't talk about a subject when they talk.
I literally have a screenshot from a manga saved on my computer because it is just like it is the ultimate vague speech for it says it's a character saying, yet despite him being my brother, I can't forgive him nor any of quote unquote them for what happened on quote unquote that day.
Oh,
I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing. What is that from?
I don't even remember. Some dumb series I was reading that I laughed out loud. The only thing I thought was funny in that series was that line, which was totally an accident. Because I could see these poor translators banging their head into the desk when they got to that line.
Yeah, it's crazy that in Japanese, a lot of times, like, the conjugation of verbs and the way that you just structure a sentence lets you exclude a subject. So you can do it, like, anytime you ask, obviously you're asking something, right?
Yeah.
But you can also use, like, volitional form or, like, I'm going to do something. And that way you can exclude yourself from the sentence. Yeah. And then that makes it, like, about you. It's really odd and horrible and honestly the most horrific thing to try to learn. So, you know, it's just one of my favorite things.
All right, Dan, let's get into some highlights here, though I don't think we have many, because this is not a, this is a very understated show. It's not like big moments.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put this.
So for me, it's the first time in the second episode, it's the very beginning when Chirico enters Udo, and we get this like noir vibe of him wandering around this sort of cyberpunk dystopian future city, and the spooky music is playing, and he's like monologuing to himself. I was like, oh, is this what the show's gonna be? Because I love this.
And really I also cool. liked how they did the thing where like everyone was like a faceless blob of like a weird random color. You know how like yeah. sometimes in like anime they do that when they don't want to yeah. like actually put detail into whatever. So I was like, oh, but that's like a stylized thing to like show that like, you know, it's the like a masses. Overcrowded yeah, yeah society. Okay, but anyhow, my favorite highlight is they're stuck doing like the horrible. So he goes from being like a soldier in a really dangerous mission going to die at like really low survival rate to yeah. getting captured to getting like interrogating to escaping a society like a military base landing in wherever this place is and then instantly becoming a prisoner. So all on top of all of that, they're mining for the stupid Jigerium, right?
Yeah.
And it starts raining and they're like, oh, we gotta put the hoods and the masks on. It's acid rain. And I was like, this show is just so bleak. Like, this is gonna be one of those shows where nothing good can happen, right? Like everything is awful and terrible, and that's just how this world is. Sort of like Warhammer 40K, but not that bad. Like it is just a yeah. dystopian show where just everything is awful. Like there's like police corruption, I guess like going into like kind of like the setting that's just like everything is terrible. There's police corruption, there's like gangs, underground fighting arenas.
Yeah. I want to say real quick before we get into this Votom setting discussion, which is our first topic. I my other highlight is the one particular song. Whenever things bad things start happening, it goes wow wow. I'm like, yeah, yeah, give me that weird trombone wah-wah sound effect.
And it's like really on the nose, right?
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. All right, let's talk setting, Dan, because I think this is something that really stands out about Votoms.
Yeah, so after or maybe it's even the first episode, we get a crawl, an opening crawl,
mm-hmm.
where it gives us like the year is 0079.
Yeah, we get that, basically.
We get that. In very much in Gundam fashion, two warring nations. Okay. Mm-hmm. Instead of a 1-year war, it's a 100-year war. Got them.
They've been fighting so long, they forgot the reason why.
What a classic excuse yeah. to not have a reason.
Yeah, I don't think they actually care. The show doesn't care about the reason, because that is not the point of this show.
Yeah, unlike Gundam, I feel like the show is not going to be very political. In the sense that, like, it's very character-driven. I guess Gundam was, too. But Gundam felt like it was also really plot-driven.
I think it's political in the sense that, like, we're going to be seeing characters who are politicians and running things and being secret, you know? Like, the secret society yeah. is political. But, like, not in the sense that we get, like, the machinations of these two galactic civilizations, right? They're
exactly.
Like, the Empire of Gilgamesh or whoever is not important. We're only really talking about Melkians, who are people from a specific planet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that scale is too big for this show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because, as we've seen before, we've been stuck on Udo for who knows how long. So maybe that's the scale of the show.
What I like, though, is that the war ends at the beginning of the second episode. He's like, and then they signed a peace treaty and 6 months passed. And you're like, huh? Like, it's yeah. such a good swerve. Because you totally expect it to have something to do with that war. And that's not at all... The whole point of mentioning the war is so that we're in a post-war environment, and I think that this is that's what like makes the setting really special.
Mm-hmm. For sure, because that does throw you for a loop, right? Where
you're expecting combat, you're expecting operations and secret units and that sort of thing,
which is also probably why I'm like, why has there been very little Votom's action.
I kind of like that.
I can probably guarantee that there will be much, much more later. Because like the show is called Votoms, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
So you mentioned earlier like the dystopian nature of this setting and how everything is going wrong, but I think that's really interesting because for one thing, Udo is like called like hell. It's like a city of darkness. Uh-huh. So it's clearly meant to be one of the worst places, but everything does seem to be a bit of a mess there, you know?
Yeah. So we have the classic, my favorite cyberpunk thing of all time, mega cities, where like you have these just like walls mm-hmm. that the city is made up of that like don't look like buildings, but they're just like metal with like weird plates and lights and stuff all over them, which is like my favorite generic sci-fi thing of all time. Because it's right. like, what is that? What is that doing? Like, does that have a purpose? So we have this giant mega city that is just like, I guess everything is kind of based off of like the Kowloon walled city in a way. Yeah. Where it's like overpopulated. It's disgusting. You have like people in the street selling. Okay, never mind. I was going to say, I don't know if I can say this anymore, but.
What? Dan, there's nothing wrong with Jigerium. You're allowed to say Jigerium on the podcast.
No, is Bushmeat a politically acceptable term?
What even is that for? I've never heard that in my life.
It's like I thought Bushmeat was unidentifiable meat sold at like sketchy places.
Okay, let's see. Bushmeat is meat from wildlife series hunted for human consumption, typically in Africa. I see nothing else here about it.
Also, I'll assume it's okay, then.
Here's a National Geographic article about it from last year, so.
I felt like our friend, one of our friends told me that was like, maybe that was a word you couldn't say, and I was confused why. Maybe I'm making stuff up.
I don't know. It seems like it's an acceptable term. I have never heard it before in my life.
You've never heard the term bushmeat?
No, I hadn't. So we'll just go with it. Wow. I'm sorry. I had in advance if Dan just said something horrible.
That Ian's my guy where if I go, Ian, can I say this thing on the podcast? And he either nods or shakes his head violently. And so in that time, I had to just throw caution to the wind. But anyhow, getting back to my point.
But yeah, they are eating really sketchy food stall.
And of course it's like a bloated frog thing, right? Yeah. Like the most unappetizing thing in the world. So that's like kind of paints the picture of Udo. And I would guess that most cities are like this, or maybe not as bad. I don't know.
It's
hard to tell.
I don't think so. I think Udo seems particularly bad, in part because there's the biker gang who periodically abducts people off the street. And have some sort of deal with the police. But then when the police decide that they're done with them because the war is over and they can't really hide all the Jigerium stuff going on anymore, and they're like, all right, let's have a street war. And basically Udo becomes a battleground between the biker gang and the cops, especially when the police chief dies and he gets replaced by the member of the secret society who really wants to hunt down Chirico as well. I don't know. I think the city then gets thrown into this state of chaos and there's firebombings and patrols and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's wild.
One thing though that I was really interested into was so this is 6 months after the peace treaty and we go to the Votoms battling arena and it's all these old Votoms pilots. And it's like, this is what do you do if you are extremely good at piloting a mecha and you're basically told you'll be fine, the war's been going on for 100 years, you can pilot this thing until you die or make enough money to quit, right? Mm-hmm. And then the war ends. The one thing no one thought was going to happen. So
yeah.
Now you've got all these people who are only good at piloting Votoms with nowhere to go, and they're stuck in this horrible city and the only thing they can do is play fight in Votoms for audiences. I think that was a really interesting sort of setup.
Yeah, it is interesting too because a lot of times we get a little bit of an origin story with the mechs. Unfortunately, in Gundam we don't until the origin, but like a lot of times there were like mobile workers before there were mechs that were like, mm-hmm. oh, these are used for construction and just general use. And we don't have that for this, which implies that maybe if there are those jobs, there's not many of them. or
doesn't seem like there's much new construction happening in Udo City.
Yeah, so it's just like, what do they do? And you're right, like, it's a 100-year war. You can sort of, you know, bank on that a little bit, right? Because, like, people have, like, been born and died during that war.
Yeah.
With no end in sight, and then seemingly out of nowhere, it just ends.
Yeah.
What happens to the arms manufacturers? Is they're still going to make VOTOMs, probably.
So I think that this, like, this post-war environment is meant to be, like, a state of chaos where different people are trying to scrabble for control in this new world where, like, all of a sudden the Empire is turning inwards for the first time and they're, like, inspecting what's going on, and the secret society is taking control of Udo, and the bikers are trying to win it back from the police, and the fighters are, like, trying to make a living for themselves. It's like this state of chaos because the war ends and all of a sudden, like, people who were getting away with things no longer can, and people who were, like, expert soldiers suddenly have nowhere to go and nothing to do. It creates, I think, a very interesting dynamic that I have no doubt was inspired by the Japanese post-war environment. I'm sure we're missing some things here.
Right to it, man.
Come on, what else could it be, Dan?
I mean, you've got a good point. Because I don't know about this matter-of-factly at all, but I remember there being, like, a lot of, like, and this could be for anything, but, like, a lot of Yakuza influence over certain things. It was, like, actually easier if you let them handle sort of like what we're seeing here with the biker gang. We're not this extreme where there's, like, slaves mining Jujirium, but it's like, listen, man, we will let your Yakuza, I should be quiet saying that word where I am. Kita Kyushu is a big Yakuza area. Actually, though.
Oh.
Fun fact.
I thought it was just for, like, nationalist vans that drive around at ungodly hours.
No. But what I was saying is that sometimes it's easier for those people who have, like, a underground grip on, like, a local area to actually let them kind of run it instead of having, like, local police force or whatever, because it's just, like, more intensive and, you know,
if the order is maintained, what does it matter?
Yeah, right. Like, okay, we'll let you do it even though it's kind of messed up, but whatever. Interesting.
So
you could write a thesis about that.
I know very little about
post-war Japan.
I took a Japanese history class in college, Dan, and I've hung on to the bits of knowledge I've retained.
What's your favorite period? Mine is
Taisho. I love literature from the Taisho period. That's an easy answer.
I don't know any of them besides Edo and Meiji.
Taisho is the brief period of democracy that occurred before World War II. It's like 30 years long. But lots of
after
writers.
Meiji,
yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It's when they introduced, like, the diet, and then after, like, 20 years, the military were just like, enough of that.
Yeah, we got things to do in Manchuria. Heck yeah! All right,
that's one way to put what the Japanese military was up to. Sure,
let's add some wars with Russia in there. Actually, was that around the time period, right?
No, I thought the Second Sino-Japanese War was in, like, the 1890s, right?
I forget when they are. There's two of them.
1937? Yeah, 1894 and then 1937. The second one is 1937.
Okay, so we were both right. We were both right. Okay. We were just confused on which one we were talking about, so we're good.
In China, it is known as the War of Resistance Against Japanese Aggression.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's descriptive. It's accurate.
All right, let's get off the show again.
Before your neighbors come after
you. Before, like, the police are knocking my door asking me what I'm talking about. Like, yeah, we're getting some
Shinzo Abe's listening to this recording live. He's got his wiretap on.
It's like, listen, man, I got, like, 4 years left on my visa, dude.
All right, so this is a really unique vibe for a show, I feel like. Can you think of watching another mecha show that's, like, noir and sort of dark and grim and not very hopeful? Sure, like, lots of mecha shows aren't hopeful, but they still have, like, distinctive elements that make them more childlike. Bright colors, kid characters. Do you know what I mean by that?
Actually, that's a super good point that I never thought of up until now. And especially for an older show. It feels like all older shows have to be, like, somewhat geared for kids. And this certainly does not. Like, you're right. Like, even like Gundam and Macross, right, are the easiest two to think of, and they're both like kind of lighthearted, yeah, kind of in their presentation at least.
They're lighthearted at certain elements, and then they have moments of darkness, of sadness, like Fruit Salad. Referring specifically to an episode of Macross, sorry, oh! not to.
Fruit Salad,
or like episodes with Amuro where he's really depressed. But this show is like that all the time. And unlike those shows, what's the toy here? Like, I guess the Votoms, right? Because it's just it's like we've seen only one thing with like color variations and slight differences.
Yeah. And there's jets, Gundam and battleships. But yeah, but there's no like iconic thing besides the Votom.
No hero suit, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and there isn't even like a definitive one too.
No, he like, keeps switching because they keep getting broken.
Like, they're all grunts, so they just get destroyed, right? Like we have the Gundam, and I guess technically Roy Fokker's Valkyrie, Veritech.
Yeah,
I'm not using the word Veritech anymore, right?
Yeah, no, it's not Veritech. Skull Squadron or whatever, right?
Yeah, like that one's pretty iconic with the color. It's like, you know, the white black.
But with this show, it's like it feels more realistic in that there are only grunt mechs. Which is exactly how the military works. They don't actually build the one super powerful mobile suit to change the course of the war. They just got a bunch of Zakus and a bunch of
gems. We only
have
enough Gundanium alloy.
I hate Gundanium alloy.
But, like, that's a really good point. This is, like, totally geared for a much older age group. And by much older, I mean, like, teenagers instead of, like, middle schoolers. So high schoolers. If you will.
Yeah. I mean, Gundam was only aimed at, like, 10-year-olds ostensibly. It was really aimed at an older crowd, because that's what he wanted to do. But it still had all these hallmark elements of a kid's show, because it had to. This is, like, a show that has no constraints. And it's 52 episodes, which is even longer than Gundam, which was, you know, canceled early. Which I think speaks to the power of how successful Gundam was, that just 4 years later, Sunrise was like, yeah, let's make this show.
Yeah, right. Oh, boy.
It's got this noir vibe that I mentioned earlier where he's wandering around the city. Love it. It's got this mystery element where he's trying to figure out what's going on and what this plot is and who these people are and what happened to the prototype who he's fixated on. And it's got a lot of human fighting. A lot of the fights in the show are just people, right? Duking it out, shooting guns at each other. There's maybe more human fighting than actual fights in the Votoms.
I would almost 100% agree with that. Like, the whole point where they're fighting the motorcycle gang the first time is, like, I mean, it's like motorcycle combat, too. But, yeah, it's just all shooting. Most of the other combat is, like, the police and the little helicopters and stuff. And then, yeah, we get some Votoms fighting kind of towards the end there. But, yeah, it's and in that way, it almost feels like it's more grounded, right?
Yeah.
Like, in what's, like, in... The other shows, I would say, are obviously more geared towards being mech-focused, especially Gundam, right? It's the name of the Gundam in the show. And therefore, like, every fight almost needs to be, you know, besides the final one, needs to be, like, inside of a Gundam or a mobile suit or whatever. But this is, like, they're not afraid to pull out the guns and gat each other. Which I feel like... In Gundam, that was, like, remember when Amuro shot that Zeon soldier and it was, like, a big deal? His mom was, like, freaking out. And it was, like, oh, my gosh, that's, like, a huge thing. But in this, they're just, like...
Got.
Like, we're going to go to a dinner held by the police chief and a bunch of thugs and then actually just kill everyone at the table with, like, a machine gun. It's, like, oh, God. That's horrifying.
So, I think this show succeeds at something that... Or it is freed from a constraint, which is the once per episode robot fight that really hamstrung original Macross. Because there were so many fights in Macross where it's like, the enemy's coming. The enemy's gone.
Yeah.
And we're like, no, go back to the date. That's the only thing I care about.
I was going to say, it's always, the premise of the episode is always, Hayato's like, or not Hayato. Hikaru Ichijo.
Yeah.
Hikaru's like, I'm going to go on a date with Lin Minmay. And he, like, gets, like, 5 minutes into the date and then, like, Misa gets on the radio and she's like, you need to get back here now, we're being attacked. And he's so like, he leaves, but and Misa!
Then he leaves and Minmay looks sad and Kaifun walks into frame and he's like, that's what's wrong with the military.
God, I want to watch that show again.
So, but it really felt like there were a lot of times where they didn't want to have a fight because they had other things planned, but they had to. This show basically shoves the middle finger at the idea of obligatory fights because for like half of those episodes, he doesn't even have a Votom.
Yeah. And I guess just now at the end, sort of, he has his own Votom, kind
of. Which has a distinctive element that will make it more recognizable in merchandising.
Yeah, and maybe like fingers crossed, this is where his Votom will become a prominent thing and that's like going to carry on the rest of the show. But
right, but it's been an interesting like extension of how desperate and like poor and like on the outs he is that he's basically been scrapping together Votoms and using them until they break. He doesn't have like full access to like the power of the military. So I don't know. I just like I find it interesting the way it balances like the heists and the shooting and the escaping with these robot fights. And the robot fights occur in a variety of different situations. Sometimes it's a one-on-one duel. Sometimes it's him fighting just regular people. Like the way the Votoms gets used, it feels like this is one of the earliest shows that is allowed to have a more mature take on like what you can do with a mecha.
Yeah, and then what was this again? 84? 83?
83.
Okay. Interesting.
I'm trying to think of like other contemporaries off the top of my head that we've seen, but really it just comes down to like First Gundam, Macross, and then a few years after this is Zeta.
Mm-hmm.
This really got there first, I think. Because even Macross is still has a lot of elements that just don't feel good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think maybe that we're missing another, like, around this time period, maybe something else came out that was a little bit more hardcore as well.
Yeah.
When did they... like, Aura Battler...
I was about to look up when Dunbean came out, but I think that was later. No, it's almost the exact same time, 1983.
And like, Edeon... still feels sort of like a kid's show, even though
it was meant to be a kid's show.
Even though it's extremely graphic.
He had to trick
horrifying.
Them into letting him make it. And like Gundam, he was like, joke's on them.
And so, like, yeah. But there are two different ways, right? You're right. Like, Ideon feels like a trick, and this feels like it's very serious. In both how graphic they are.
And I respect Ideon and Gundam because they had to pull a trick. To get made. To get, like, to... They were never going to get made if he was upfront about like what he was going to be doing with those shows. And then clearly like that technique paid off because we got shows like this just a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we should probably watch Dunbean sometime soon so we can compare where they come down to.
Yeah,
Dunbean's
like
sort of like a fantasy series though, so it's really interesting.
It's the first isekai, right? Not the first one.
No,
but...
we've been over this, Dan. Let's talk about Chirico. Our MC, our protag.
What a dumb name.
Okay, you didn't have to say it, but you're right.
Well, okay, I shouldn't be saying that when we're comparing him to Camille and Amuro.
I like Camille. But it's not a girl's name.
Alright, you got the joke there before me.
Da-da-da.
Wow, God, what an original joke.
Yeah, call me Jared.
Penis? Alright.
That was pretty funny. So, Chirico, I think, is really interesting. I mentioned this earlier. Here are a couple things that I think set him apart from our other mecha protagonists of the time and even of today. He's not a kid. He's not reluctant. He's not, like, being made to do something by some outside force, right? He's got agency. Everything he's doing is because he's decided that's what he wants to do. He's not talkative. He almost never...
He's
shuts
really
up
silent.
For so long as like the three people argue, and then he says like two sentences, and they're like, "Well, I guess that's what's up."
I would add another thing to this list.
Oh, I was gonna also add he is highly determined. He has something he wants.
Okay,
what were you gonna say?
My last one I would say is he's competent
from the gate. Like, yeah, from
yes,
the get-go.
And that is something I think is a staple in a lot of our shows because it's like protagonist. Gets into mobile suit. They have never piloted it before. They are a bit of a prodigy. My bad. Wrong word.
Amuro was the progeny of the creator of the Gundam. Okay.
I only know that, you know what's sad? I only know that word from the trailer of Gundam Origin, The Red Comet, where they're like, Zeon Daikun's progeny, which is even more pathetic.
That's pretty bad, yeah.
Sorry, that's pretty bad, right? But yeah, sorry. So, like, a lot of the times our main character, our MC, if you will, is a prodigy, but they're still, like, have some sort of, like, thing that holds them back. It's either, like, their emotions, they're just not mature enough, blah, 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 blah. It's something like that, right? But literally, we have this dude who, like, literally the first scene, he's gadding people in his Votom.
Yeah, like, and he like, in that first operation, he survives and takes out, like, 10 people in, like, these huge fights he's outnumbered in.
Mm-hmm. Then he escapes from a military base, hijacks a jet, gets out of there, goes to a city, starts living his own life, gets captured. Like, he's like what I'm trying to get at is we have a dude who's sort of like the John Rambo of this
universe.
It's not
a bad comparison, though.
Where he can just sort of get himself out of, like, any situation and is, like, a very skilled pilot, but also is, like, very competent at everything else. Like, he's a really good mechanic, and he's a really good fighter.
Yeah.
And probably pretty reasonably smart from what we've seen, too. So,
considering the first Rambo movie is about disaffected veterans of Vietnam War, it seems to me like a good comparison.
I didn't even think about that, but yeah.
The first Rambo movie is totally different from the other ones. Like, one person dies in it.
Yeah, you know what's sad? I know about the first Rambo movie, and I only ever seen the second one.
Where I don't think that's a unique experience with Rambo.
Yeah, where he, like, takes, like, the recurve bow, and he, like, not recurve, it's like a compound bow, and he, like, shoots the dude with a pistol. Yeah. On, like, the other side of the river. All right, anyhow, sorry.
Yeah, and I don't know, I like that about him. He is competent. He's very different. He's also just not prone to trust, right? These people save his life, like, 8 times in, like, as many episodes, and finally, in one of the monologues, he's like, I guess I saw them as friends. And you're like, yeah, I hope so, dude. They're all little weirdos who, like, are really in it for themselves, but they do care about him, or else they wouldn't keep trying.
Yeah, that's a good point, because they're all sort of underground degenerates, if you will, and, like, there's the one scene where the guy's, like, trying to get him to sign a contract, and he's clearly over-eager, right? He's like, just sign it, don't worry about reading it, just sign it.
Like, read the contract, and he starts to read it, and he's like, oh, I'll take that.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, there's something more here to these people, and they're all sort of scummy individuals, but at the end of the day, maybe they got little hearts of gold. Maybe.
Ooh,
we don't really
little
know.
Hearts of gold, yeah. But I don't know. I think it's really interesting. I'm interested to see where Chirico goes once he finds the prototype, the woman. Because he's a refreshing departure from.
Yeah, I'm excited for the mystery. It's been a while since we've seen a show where there is, like, a mystery that I feel like will be the entire show, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting.
All this said, Dan, there is a major problem with these 10 episodes, which we talked about a bit at the beginning, and we sort of held off on while we discussed everything else, which is that the it's pacing again. It's always pacing.
Yeah.
Every time we have a problem with the show, it feels like in the last couple of months, it's been pacing issues.
Maybe we're the ones who just, like, we're jaded. Like, we're just,
Do our eyes see things at half the speed of other people?
Like, when I watch Mecha, my brain clocks down to half the speed, and I just, like, it's like a time warp. But yeah, like, the first 2 episodes of this are really good. Really good.
Second episode, I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm a fan of immediately getting picked off the street and made into a slave. That was, like, very sudden. But
yeah,
you're right, the suddenness of it means that things keep happening. It keeps rolling along.
See, that's the thing. I'd almost prefer a Tomino breakneck plot that makes no sense compared to a Tomino, I'm in the desert plot and I want this to end, you know,
Macross
sequence.
7.
Like Macross 7 is a great example of, I think, us being like, we were done with the show like 30 episodes before it ended. And it was like, come on, man, just end the show. But when a show goes fast, like Knights in Magic, it's jarring. But at least it doesn't feel like your whole week is being wasted, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a really bad balance where I'd almost rather really fast plot, I guess, to really slow plot. But that's a personal preference.
It makes me appreciate, though, how hard it is to nail down how much should be happening when. Obviously, we're dealing with what I consider to be probably the hardest to pace of the standard formats, the 50 episode.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue probably the OVA is the easiest to pace, followed by the 12 episode, then the 24, and then the 50. So it's just in general, like, the longer the episode, longer the show, the harder to pace it is. But something, there's a huge jump in difficulty with 50 episodes because almost always, here's what I think, they establish an overall plot and they either drastically overshoot the plot and realize they need to stall hardcore. This is the Macross 7 problem where there just isn't enough plot to go around. Or the Tomino issue where they undershoot it. And all of a sudden he's like, oh crap, we gotta like wrap up now, right?
Uh-huh. Like it's like, oh, I only left myself 3 episodes to finish this.
They sort of look like the same thing because they both mean having a lot of episodes where there isn't a plot happening. But I think it's a matter of front-loading, back-loading. And this is... Votoms is tricky because, you know, we're seeing characters who are part of the overall story and we're hearing things that are part of the overall story, but nothing has happened. Like, we haven't gotten any answers in 10 episodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like we're making progress, but it's all sort of illusory.
Yeah, and it's like trying to what I was going to get back to in the beginning where I said, like, I've never seen this show before, so I don't know how important every episode is. In the sense that, like, when I watch, and I can spoil this because we've seen it, IBO, I know when we get to the stupid mobile armor arc that
you can turn
I don't...
your brain off for 5 or 6 episodes.
Yeah. It's like that actually, in the grand scheme of the entire show, doesn't matter. It's just one way for, you know, this dude to get his thing, right? It's like, okay, got it. Here, this is most likely a setup where we're now meeting all of the major characters, right? Like I said before. But what if it's not? What if for some ungodly reason, the next thing is like he meets back up with a secret society. Now we get like a whole new set of characters or something like that. Like, I don't know. And so I think it'll be interesting to see what this show does. It's going to be wild. Like, this show has changed my expectations completely because I never knew what this show was. I thought this was going to be a typical military show.
Same.
And it is clearly not. And it'll be interesting to see where the show goes because I have no idea. Like, do these characters all go on an adventure together? Blah, 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 blah. Like, who knows?
Yeah, I really don't know where things are going, which I do like. But my problem is that the stuff that they're doing in these 10 episodes that aren't plot related, and that can be fine. We've had lots of shows that have gone off on not necessarily plot related tangents that we've enjoyed or that are doing interesting things. So we've sort of forgiven them for not really addressing the plot.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff they're doing in these episodes, I think, are kind of boring. And the problem is that we've seen it all before in Votoms.
Like, yeah.
How many times, Dan, is Chirico captured and then escapes or is rescued? I think it's 4 separate times. He's captured by the biker gang and he escapes. He's captured by the police and he sees the vision of God and he escapes.
Mm-hmm.
He like ambushes Isqui and gets in, sort of is captured at the factory before he escapes. He's not fully captured there, but he just about is. Or the tower, police tower. And then the fourth time is he's captured and freed from the convoy by his friends, right?
Is that the one where they're throwing the money from the street? Or from from the helicopter. Yeah.
4 times he's captured by someone and then is rescued or escapes. This is recidivism, Dan, and it's a major problem with our country. Sorry, no, but I don't know. I was like, oh boy, here we go again. I wonder how they'll save him this time. I was just kind of bored by it.
It almost makes it like you could just, you know, cut out 2 of those episodes and make this a 50 episode instead of a 52 episode show.
Yeah, what?
But for real.
What is up with that? So that, and then there's the problem of it is a slow burn on stuff like the prototype and what the mission was and who the society is. We see the prototype a few times. She's a part of this, but like only in moments. So I actually don't know, like, are we about to learn all about her like next episode, or is this going to be another 10 episodes of this? It's kind of hard to see the trajectory of the show. Maybe that's a good thing because it means I'll be surprised. mm-hmm. which also means that I have a hard time evaluating like how much I need to care about each individual episode.
Exactly. And that's, I think that's the struggle too. I also think it's really weird how coincidental that the prototype is at the exact same place as this dude, Chirico.
I guess it makes sense in that he was on a ship representing his home country, his home planet, right? And the people who were part of that secret society then were also from his home planet. And then he went back to his home planet, and that's where they are too. So I can sort of see it.
Oh, okay. I guess that's fair.
If it's like a Milkian conspiracy, right? Then they were like, well, now we'll take all the stuff we got back to Milkia to achieve our goal of running the world's worst city, I guess. I hope we find out what their plan is, because it seems like it's a terrible one so far. Like, oh, I really hope I get to run the world's dumbest place. For me, though, another problem is the aesthetics of it, right? There's a lot of these episodes that are them hiding in the sewers or in a garage, or like they're in prison in these big gray factories. It's like they've chosen to focus on the most boring possible parts of their setting.
It's almost like that's the easiest parts to animate.
It's almost as if it saves them from having to represent the crowd of people who live in the city.
Yeah.
It's that.
I have, you know, recognizable landmarks.
It's not a desert, but it is a sewer. And sewer levels are the deserts of video games. So
didn't we say that before or something like that?
Was that on another show that had a lot of time in the sewer, didn't it? I forget which one, but
did we have the discussion on the podcast though, where we said something about how sewer levels are always the worst and we don't know why they exist?
I think we talked about that on the podcast. Yeah, because we were talking about that and we were like, oh, it's because they're so easy to make because you can just repeat those efforts.
Yeah. So. The desert is the sewer levels
of mecha anime. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good way of describing it. That's very apt. That's what we're doing right now, is we're in the sewers.
Should we move on to the mech corner?
Dan. Yeah, let's do it. Oh, man, we've sort of run a little singular long here.
Mech corner. It's fine, because this won't take long.
So the Votoms, I think it's the Scope Dog is like the actual name of this particular.
I remember seeing that as well.
Here's one on Amazon. $125. Oh, it's pretty good looking though.
Is it a PVC model?
Bandai, it's an action figure.
Oh.
Is it a model kit? It's got a model kit looking box. Oh yeah, runners. It's got runners. Okay.
Oh,
so here's the thing about the Votom.
Very old.
Here's one for $700. That just means that no one's selling it, though.
Well, what the heck? I just found one for $500. What the heck? Why are they so expensive? Yeah. Why are Votoms so expensive?
Here's like an SD for $40.
Okay. What? For $40? Bruh.
Man, I think it's all imported, right? There's no like official American release Votoms.
They're probably also out of production run. There's no way that they're still being produced, unless, well, maybe.
This
okay.
Was recent. Anyhow, the point is, the thing about these guys is their scale.
I was actually just going to bring that up too.
We are used to the 30-meter, the 28-meter Gundam, right? And a lot of mechs default to that size.
It's like some go bigger it first try.
Super robot shows tend to go a lot bigger, like Gridman and Eva and the Ideon.
Yeah, Evas are huge.
This is closer to the size of stuff we saw in like Megazone 23, which also, now that I think about it, totally rips from Votoms.
Yeah.
So, all right, here, let's describe this thing. Most of them are green. Some are red. It's probably about like 15 feet tall, I would say, right?
Yep.
Which makes it like 5 meters, significantly shorter than the Gundam. It's got a three lens head on a track.
It's like Splinter Cell.
The
mask. Yeah.
it's a really thick. It's got a thick chest compartment. Typical round shoulders. Standard arms. The legs are flat on the ground. There's no high heel business. They're very standard 80s. It's got a lot of like handles. It looks very industrial, heavily plated. It's got like radio receivers coming out of its head. Typically, it just has a regular machine gun. And what's crucial is that the head and front hatch of the chest opens up, and that's where the pilot sits. So it's not like they sit in the chest and the head is separate. It's like they sit in and the head comes over them like a tank, like they're looking through where
like
the
a
head
visor
is.
Yeah,
so the human's head is in line with the with the head of the mech and in line with the lenses. The human wears like a special sort of like night vision goggle style face thing over like this red suit, which I think is what allows them to sync with the scope dog. They're pretty articulate. They have a bunch of different weapon attachments depending on who's using them. They're mostly, we saw them in space. They fly around a bunch and like freewheel. And on the ground, they're more like tanks, the slow moving. But I don't know. What, do you have anything else you want to say about the general design?
I think like another thing is, if you're just going purely off of our audio descriptions, if you just sort of squint your eyes, the silhouette is very reminiscent of a Zaku.
Yes.
Right? This, like rounded shoulder pads. The legs kind of are like chunky thigh or calves. The arms almost look entirely like a Zaku arm.
Yeah.
And then like the waist plate, which is not a bad thing because it doesn't look...
It's got a standard Gundam-style skirt.
Which is not a bad thing because the Zaku 2 is so amazing. And literally, it's the same guy who made both. So, like, he can be derivative of his own work. It's fine. I think the scale is the most interesting thing, like you were saying. They're really tiny.
So, yeah, this model is 1 in 20.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, I'm actually looking at it right now. Imagine a full-grown adult standing up. You would go about halfway up its thigh.
Yeah.
And
if I remember correctly, that gets you a full grown adult just barely gets above the lip of part of the foot of a Gundam. Like,
And if you look at that model kit again, the really cool thing is there's little like ladder bits built into it to help you climb up it.
Yeah.
So there's like one on the kneecap and one on the skirt and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's honestly, that was a really good comparison you made. It's sort of like halfway between a tank and a mobile suit.
Yeah.
In the way that it's operated, it's 100% a mobile suit, but you know.
Yeah,
it's like kind of cool with all the latches and stuff. And the
yeah,
way
you can see into the cockpit is interesting. I really like the scope dog Votoms, whatever. It's cool. I think it's a simple design. It's very military. It's very mass produced, which is sort of the point. I think it's simple and effective. I like the way it looks. I like the way they play with the scale to make it maybe a little more realistic that they're like assisted humans more than they are like giant towering buildings fighting each other.
I also love the name. Scope Dog is sick.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think this is a classic design. I think this holds up.
And I remember seeing this before, thinking it was good. I had no idea like what it was really from. Because I have seen Plamo like floating around of it, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind building one of these, but if they're that
if it wasn't $1 billion. Yeah.
All right. Dan, what are your final thoughts?
Truthfully, as I said before, I thought these first 10 episodes were kind of boring, but, and I said I'm jaded and I'm like a second term president, but I am looking forward to seeing how this show changes. Like, I pray to God, I always say this, I pray to God this next set of 10 episodes is going to be something drastic. Like, I hope like they're like, all right, now we go to space, or like now the plot begins, or at least some sort of sub arc happens. That's interesting. That like sort of, you know, moves us somewhere. It doesn't even have to move us in the direction of the main plot, but I want it to move us somewhere different. Because if we stay on the streets of Udu or in the sewers, it would be really sad. So that's kind of all I have to say.
100% agree. We need to go somewhere. I want them to break out of this pattern. Where it's, you know, it's, oh, we're on the streets and we're doing this. Now we're captured. Now we're rescuing. Oh, now we're back fighting the police. I want like, let's say they kill the chief of police or something, and then the other guy has to swear revenge, so they go on the run because they're hunted. Like, oh, and now we've opened up a whole lot of possibilities. It's clear this is an intergalactic world with space travel being fairly common. So let's see it. Let's break it open a little, or at least go to a different part of Nokia than Udo City. I'm just sort of very tired of it. I'd like to see some sort of momentum. You're right. It doesn't have to be main plot, but give me, like, 3 episodes where they achieve something, you know.
Agreed.
It just feels like we're just running into the same wall over and over again. Next week, Dan, Votoms 11 through 20.
It's gonna be a long time.
We're
Votoms,
not even.
Yeah.
If you want to reach out to us and oh geez Louise, break down like the timeline between like which mecha series came out when. Like, I want to know, it was this the first real robot series where they're like, and it's an adult and it doesn't have to be for kids, or was something like that before this? You can reach us at mechadoaboutnothing@gmail.com. That's the name of the podcast, at gmail.com. Our website is mechadoo.moe, and our Twitter account is at mechadoopodcast. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Until next week, will you be able to survive?